This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And this is Hot Start.
Yeah, Hot Start.
Well, warm start today. Yeah, we'll get there.
Lukewarm start.
Joining us is Mr. Steve Robinson. How are you, sir?
I'm very good. Thank you very much. And thanks for inviting me along.
Oh, no. We're glad to have you. Otherwise, they'd have to listen to us two talk. And
they don't want that.
Now, you're a disabled pilot.
I am.
And you might as well explain that.
Yes, I'll go into more detail, I guess. Well, I was awarded a flying scholarship back in the UK by Prince Faisal of Jordan and the Chief Air Marshal of the RAF. And really, I applied for this flying scholarship because I was afraid of flying. I was also afraid of horses, so I took horse riding lessons at the same time.
Which was worse?
Well, you know, the scary thing about horses is when you say go left, they don't always go left.
Right.
Hopefully the aircraft is. Well, yep. It does, you know. Sometimes it doesn't if you've got problems. But, you know, 9 times out of 10, you're safe with an aircraft and not so safe with a horse, it feels.
It's the thing, I don't want to ride something that has a mind of its own.
And they certainly do. But, you know, I overcame these fears. And just because I didn't want to be afraid of them anymore. You know, what's the point of having fears? Because when you're afraid, they hold you back. And I didn't want to be held back by anything. And I really had a poor upbringing, really. I came from a really poor background. And I was badly bullied at school. And this got me involved in motorbikes because I was trying to escape the bullies. And I got involved with motorbikes and lost my right arm at the age of 18 in a motocross accident. I think you call it motocross over here as well,
yep.
Do you? Or
yep.
Motor X. And I was very good at that. But unfortunately, it ended up in me losing a right arm. So that then made me go into different walks of life, really, and do different things. Of which I did just loads and loads of stupid things, really. Stupid things because you wouldn't think a one-armed guy would do it.
Right.
You know, I was a breakdancer. Now, who wants to be a breakdancer with one arm?
It makes it a little harder, I would think.
Well, it did make it a lot harder. But it did take a long time to be able to do a one-handed handstand. But now I'm 54, I can't do one anymore, and I don't really want to.
You don't need to.
Yeah, no, been there, done that, got the T-shirt.
So then really I just went forwards and did different things. I was always interested in vintage jukeboxes and vintage one-armed bandits. Now, that's a bit of a pun really because I've got one arm and they used to call me the one-armed bandit.
Right.
Now, I said to an American friend recently, I'm going to America and I'm speaking and I'm going to tell this joke about one-armed bandits. I said, will the American market know what a one-armed bandit is? And she said to me, it's an American word, Steve.
Yeah.
I said, oh, great.
I think it was invented here, that term.
I think it was invented here. So the good thing is I don't have to explain that joke. So that's quite good. So I got involved in vintage jukeboxes, vintage one-armed bandits, and vintage motorbikes, restoring them. And then at the age of 34, 35, I thought these things are getting too heavy, and I need to do something that's lighter because I'm moving all these heavy stuff around with one arm. So I applied to go to university, but I've got no qualifications from school, and I didn't think they'd let me in. And they did let me in. And I ended up with a first-class honours degree in computer science from Leeds Metropolitan University. And for my final year project, I created a digital jukebox. And that digital jukebox became a million-pound seller.
Wow.
And I sold 400 jukeboxes in 8 months. It just went crazy, phenomenal. I couldn't really keep up with demand. There were just so many. Then I ended up in litigation because a company stole my copyright. Then I had 6 years of death threats. And at the end of that, I was so down and depressed and afraid of horses and afraid of flying that I decided I'd deal with them because I thought I wasn't really worried about the consequences. I thought if I crash the plane, then I'm dead. And I thought, well, okay, that's acceptable.
I can deal with that,
you know. Well, that's the worst that could happen. And things just went from better to better. And then that got me into motivational speaking, got me into becoming a one-armed pilot. I had to invent my own prosthetic arm.
Yeah, why did you choose to do that? Just because of the challenge, or you couldn't afford somebody else's arm? Or?
Well, I guess a real arm would be ideal, but I don't have one of those.
Yeah, those are harder to come by.
Yeah, they're really difficult to come by. And we have the NHS in the UK, which is the National Health Service, so it's a bit like a social health care. And I approached the NHS and said, would you build me this prosthetic arm? So they did. But unfortunately, it failed at 3,500 feet when we were doing flight training.
Ooh.
And it fell off. It was on the floor.
Wow. I mean, that's funny now, but it wasn't then.
Well, you know, at the time it was sort of scary, funny, terrifying. It was like a mixed bag of emotions, really. When you see your prosthetic arm on the floor and you're screaming to your instructor, you have control. And he's screaming back, no, you've got to do it by yourself, Steve. You've got to do it by yourself. And then the aircraft went into this spiral dive and we dropped through a cloud. Then I told him my arm had fallen off. And he got it and he took control. And we tried and tried, but the prosthetic arm didn't work. So we went back to my hometown in Leeds, which is in Yorkshire in the north of England. And I had Mark II prosthetic arm made. And that took another 12 months to make. The first one took 12 months. So it'd taken 2 years for two arms to be made. And when the second one was made, that failed as well and didn't work. So now I'm thinking, what do I do? Do I just give up on this dream and forget all about it? Or do I fight? And I realised that when things get tough, you've got to push that a little bit harder, haven't you? So I pushed that a little bit harder and I went and I bought a milling machine and I went and bought a lathe and then I bought a little piece of aluminium and I started turning it and milling it with this idea of a prosthetic arm in mind. And I didn't know what the arm would really look like. I just had this idea of I knew what it wanted, how I wanted it to function and it would take its own shape and its own design. And it did. But it ended up looking fantastic. I was like RoboCop. It looked amazing and it worked. So I completed my flight training with my homemade prosthetic arm.
Now, was this a purely mechanical device or was it an electrical mechanical?
This one's purely mechanical. And what happened was I realized that I needed to lock the shoulder joint. I needed a flexible elbow and a flexible wrist. And I realized at that point, if I could then just push with my shoulder, then it would affect the throttle. I fly an aircraft called a Robin 2160. It's a two-seater aerobatics aircraft. Now, I normally say I don't do aerobatics, but I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. So then I realised that I needed this arm also to fasten to my body and I made this custom jacket. It was like a semi-rigid jacket that fits like a waistcoat but it's really well fitting and you don't feel the pressure from straps. So I mount my prosthetic arm onto this jacket and the forearm has got an extendable forearm and I can lock it from being telescopic and not being telescopic. So if I unlock it and I move around, none of my body movement is transferred to the throttle.
Right.
When I lock the forearm or the telescopic part, now my body movement transfers all movement to the throttle. And the 2160 is a stick flown, so I have my left arm on the stick and my right shoulder just moves backwards and forwards affecting the throttle.
An elegant solution.
And it works. It's simple, but it works. Then a company asked me recently in the UK, could they... And they were going to 3D print it. So I said, yes, please do that. So the 3D printed me a plastic arm. But I needed that one for a specific reason, because I was approached by a TV company and a TV program in the UK, and it's called This Time Next Year. I don't know whether it's something similar in the US, but what happens is you go on TV and you make a pledge that I will do this, what I promise to do by this time next year. So they said to me, would I do a pledge? And I said, yeah. Would you like me to ride a horse around a field? They said, no. I said, would you like me to land at 5 airports in 5 hours? They said, no. We'd like you to do aerobatics. But I said, no, I'm afraid of aerobatics. And then they said to me, are you a motivational speaker? I said, yes. They said, don't you go around the world saying how anything is possible? I said, yes. She said, don't you also talk about overcoming your fears by using exposure therapy? By which point, I realised I'd backed myself into a corner. So I had to say yes. So now, I'm an aerobatics pilot.
There you
Sweet.
Go. Nice.
That's
nice.
Quite interesting. Bit of an interesting story, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
Exactly. As long as the determination is there.
I think that's all it is. I think you've just got to be determined and never listen to anybody. You only listen to people that say, yes, you can do it. Anybody that says, no, you can't do it, just ignore them. Because, obviously, they don't know.
Right.
That's the great thing about the human spirit. We are unstoppable. We
yep.
see a problem. We will figure out a way.
But it's really interesting as well, isn't it? You know, given a problem, the solution and finding a solution is really, really interesting.
Right. The acronym I always like, they say fear is false evidence appearing real.
Yes. I like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to try use that quote somewhere.
There you go.
Yeah, but it's just, I guess, I'm confronted by problems on a daily basis. When I lost a right arm, tie my shoelace, you think, can you do that one-handed? Well, I would have said, no, you can't do it. It's impossible. Until you actually give it a go.
Right.
And then you can do it. So you have to become a problem solver, even solving little problems. But then when you get confronted by a big problem, you realise it's only a sequence of small problems that need solving. And so long as you break it down into small problems, you can cope and you can do it. Like building an aircraft. To me, that sounds absolutely incredible. It must be super difficult. But I see these guys doing it on a daily basis and they find it really easy, just basic engineering mm-hmm. and applying yourself.
I believe there was a guy who was a paraplegic who built his own airplane.
Really? Over here in the U.S.?
In this country. I remember reading that.
Well, there are paraplegic motorcycle riders, too. They just roll their wheelchair into a specially built trike, and they're out knees in the breeze with everybody else.
I've seen them. They look really good, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they love it. It's great.
I've just sold my motorbike.
Did you?
Yes, I had a Harley Davidson. It was beautiful.
Well, I bet you miss riding, too.
Oh, I really do. I really miss riding. And this motorbike, I bought it not to ride it. I bought it intending initially to ride it. And then it was too big to put in my workshop. It just took up so much space. But it was a San Diego ex-police motorbike, and it was absolutely beautiful.
And this is over in the UK?
This was in the UK.
I wonder how it found its way over there.
It was in a museum, surprisingly, in the south of England. And I built a jukebox, because I build jukebox and invent things. And I invented this digital jukebox. And this jukebox I invented was in an astronaut figure, so it would have been great for the NASA tent.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a full kiosk and multimedia kiosk and jukebox, so you'd put your money in, you make your selection, and it was amazing. This chap turned up and wanted to buy it, but he didn't want to pay enough money, so he offered me his Harley Davidson in part exchange.
Nice.
So
there
I did
you
that.
Go.
I did. It's a win-win.
Yes, you worked it out. Wow. It's an amazing story of overcoming what other people would see are limitations. And with disabilities, I always thought to myself, it's not that you can't do something, it's just that you do it differently.
You have to do things differently. And you have to gain a lot more patience. Just to do a simple thing, brushing your teeth, you've got to get one-handed, for example, you've got to get a toothbrush, you've got to hold it between your legs or put it on a surface, then you've got to go and get your tube of toothpaste, then squeeze it on, then put that back, then get your toothpaste. It's a step, just you've got to learn patience. Everything becomes 2 and 3 and 4 or 5 times longer.
Right. Well, I want to thank you for joining us, Steve.
You're more than welcome.
And an amazing story. I want to see some one-handed aerobatics.
Definitely.
I think that should be your axe name, one-arm bandit.
Yeah, I think that it used to be my CB name. Remember the days of the CB? Well, it was popular back in the UK as well, and my handle was the one-arm bandit.
There you go.
Very cool.
Well, thank you for joining us.
You're more than welcome. Thank you for having me.
And good luck with all your endeavors out there.
Thank
Definitely.
You. Thank you.
This is Digital Dave.
I'm Fast Eddie.
And this is EAA Radio.